Good afternoon. I'd like to call to order the October 16, 2019 meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors. We start each meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. Charles, I noticed you brought a big contingent today, so would you be happy to lead us in the pledge?
I want to be I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
April, do we have any, could you announce our guests and if we have anybody wishing to do public comment?
We have our team from Webb & Associates. We also have Renee with Piper Jeffrey and Patricia with CIFAC. And
very
we
good.
Do not have any requests to speak at this time.
All right. Thank you so much. With that, we will go to our...
So sorry.
We'll go to our executive reports. Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice President Pauley, members of the board. My written report is included in your package. On October 15th, President Sullivan and staff, Joe Wad and myself, had an opportunity to meet with Western Municipal Water District, both a representative of the board and their staff, regarding their potential participation in the North Paris Groundwater Basin Project. Just by background, that project is estimated to produce about 6,700 acre-feet of treated and blended water per year in groundwater in the northwestern portion of our service area in kind of around the March Air Reserve Base Complex. Capital costs are estimated at $73 million, and we submitted a grant application to the state for $36.5 million. Western has indicated an interest in potentially being a project partner and participant, so we initiated those discussions with them and essentially put together a draft proposal that talked about their participation levels, who would be lead on technical development, how the grants that we've already applied for would inure to Eastern's benefit, how we'd handle external advocacy, et cetera. We thought it was a very productive meeting, very well received. Western is going to think about the proposal, get back to us in a couple of weeks, and we will be briefing the board as we continue to develop a project participation agreement and proposal if Western does want to move forward and be a partner in the project, a financial partner. We had a second item. We had a very good meeting in Sacramento on October 14th, our governmental affairs staff and myself. We met with the newest members of the State Water Resources Control Board. We had not had a chance to meet with them and brief them, so it was a good opportunity. So we met first with Laurel Firestone. And then Sean McGuire, they, as I mentioned, are the two newest members. By background, Laurel Firestone's an attorney, but she was previously the co-executive director of the Community Water Center, which is a statewide nonprofit environmental justice organization that deals with failing water systems in the Central Valley. Mr. McGuire is a civil engineer, and he has a background in both the public and private sector. But they had the meetings were very productive. We covered and first gave them a full background on EMWD. We talked about their water affordability initiatives, such as AB 401, and kind of issues we have with that and how that's proceeding. We discussed our bill that's now a two-year bill, SB 414, and our water use efficiency strategies and some other topics. I thought the meeting was very productive, and we received positive feedback in two areas. First, on our bill, they encouraged us to move forward with the staff at the State Board to look at refinements to the bill. We do have a meeting set up with the State Water Resources Control Board staff and council early in November, so that was very positive. And then also on some of our ideas relative to the water affordability question. So we thought it was a very good set of meetings. We invited them to come down and take tours of the district. Interestingly, the state board members have assigned various regions of the nine regions of the regional water quality control boards, and I think Laurel's region is San Diego, and Mr. McGuire's region is our region, San Diego. Is that right, or was it the other way around? Okay, I got it the other way around. But they take periodic tours down here, so we are going to set up a tour for them as they come down and interface with the regional boards. Also, I wanted to point out one thing. The Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, OEHA, as they're known, they're actually getting into the Act on the Human Right to Water issues in California. October 3rd, they held a webinar to discuss a report that they released. And the title of that report is Achieving the Human Right to Water in California, an Assessment of the State's Community Water Systems. And they have a web-based tool that goes with that. And basically, they put together a report that's intended to inform the public and decision makers about agencies' ability to address human right to water-related issues, specifically water quality, water accessibility, and water affordability. And they use kind of scoring indicators for each of the agencies. And so obviously they're really getting into this. They're publishing it. They're asking for comments on it. I think the water industry are concerned with kind of the contextual accuracy of some of that data, how it's going to be used. Is that going to be turned into an enforcement mechanism? And I think also with why OEHA, you know, the Environmental Health Hazard Assessment Office, is getting into this portion of the human right to water versus the state board. So, again, we just thought that was very interesting. It's something we're tracking and staying very engaged in. And we're also coordinating with AQUA and CMUA to articulate our concerns on that. Lastly, I just want to remind the board our Business Connection Luncheon is on Thursday, October 24th with our vendors and suppliers. We do that periodically. We, as at the end of last week, had 30 RSVPs. I think we have more now, expecting 80 to 100 people. So if you can make that, that would be great. Are there any questions? Comments?
I have one.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, very good. Nick, do we have anything?
Just one item. Just want to let you know that we continue to coordinate with Fulbert Public Utilities District and the Rainbow Municipal Water District with regards to their pursuit of the possibility of de-annexing from the San Diego County Water Authority and acquiring wholesale water service through Eastern. Last week, there was an item that went to the San Diego LAFCO Commission, wherein they approved an MOU between the Riverside LAFCO and San Diego LAFCO, which would allow San Diego to take the lead on any application that might be received associated with their pursuit of that. And then this week, Charles Turner, Joe Mulott, and myself had a conference call with the executive officer for San Diego LAFCO, as well as GM from Fallbrook and Rainbow, to make sure that we all kind of understand the process going forward. So I just want to let you know that Fallbrook and Rainbow are serious about continuing to pursue this possibility, and we're going to continue to coordinate with them as they soon submit their application, as we understand it.
Very good. Keep us informed on that. Jeff, anything for us this morning, Mr. Wall, or this afternoon?
Happy report. We survived our second potentially significant PSPS event. In actuality, after rolling the generators out to 24 different locations, only one site was turned off, and that happened to be inverter to protect a pipeline against cathodic protection. So really no impact to us other than scrambling. But we weathered that fine. We are working with the general manager to authorize the rental of some portable generators, which is probably going to turn into a contract of sufficient size that we bring it to the board in a future meeting. San Diego Water Authority continues to work on the pipeline number 4 repair. They're installing a multi-layer carbon fiber lining on the interior of the pipe. I'm not sure how they bond it, but that work is progressing. As of right now, we're hearing they will shut down the pipeline, which is currently operating up to 95 CFS. They will shut that down on November 4th to begin a 10-day period to remove the bulkheads and then plan to put the pipe back in service. So, happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Jeff? On the renting generators, at some point, do we have dialogue going on with Edison to try and get them to be a little more specific on their power? I noticed I got a bunch of notifications today that they're looking to do this again this weekend, potentially.
Yeah, so we've been in constant contact, regular contact with our account rep. I think I mentioned at the last board meeting, she was in the dark on the very first time. She had no clue that we've been notified and the sites have been taken offline. So Their communications have been kind of random and radical. What they tell us in terms of individual meters that will be potentially be affected, contrast that with their circuit maps that where our facilities are located, they don't match. So there's a lot of misinformation on their side of the event, and we're just struggling through it, trying to stay on top and make sure that we continue to pump water.
No, I understand. I just want to make sure we kind of stay on them because it's a big expense to our ratepayers to make sure our system's up. So nice work on that. Mr. Marat, anything for us?
Just one item. Last night we attended the City of San Jacinto City Council meeting and we briefed the council on our upcoming construction of the Mountain Avenue West replenishment basin. We provided details relative to the proposed hauling of excess material from the site to the Saboba reservation. We also discussed mitigation of temporary construction impacts, including noise and dust and traffic control. The council was very supportive of the project, but they also had a number of questions as far as mitigating the temporary impacts. One of the issues that we are working on with the city's engineering team is a participation agreement whereby we will participate in mitigating the impact of certain segments of the pavement that's deteriorated, given that we'll be hauling roughly 29,000 truckloads of dirt along a portion of Mountain Avenue. We are negotiating with them an agreement whereby we would participate to a very limited degree in replacement of certain pavement sections. So as we develop that agreement, we'll be bringing that item to the board for your consideration.
Very good.
Is Mountain Avenue a designated truck route?
Yes, a portion of it, yes.
Okay, so it may not fail. They're not talking about failure now.
So there are a number of sections currently that are essentially alligated pavement sections along Mountain Avenue.
The current condition of the pavement is poor.
And so the city does currently have a project that was to grant an overlay those areas and extend the life of the pavement. We've asked them to defer that project because of our upcoming project. And then essentially, in lieu of granite overlay, those sections that are already in very poor condition after 8 months of hauling material, we anticipate they'll require replacement instead of granite overlay. So it's the delta, the difference between the granite overlay and replacement that we feel is an equitable approach for our participation.
That we feel we're responsible
for. Yes.
That's all right.
Very good. Thank you so much. With that, we will move on to item 3, which is the consent calendar. Do I have a board members have anything they want to pull on the consent calendar? Okay, that case.
Second.
We have a motion and second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Very good. That passes with Director Sullivan and Director Record absent. With that, we'll move on to item 4, which is our action calendar, and number A, which is to adopt a proposed resolution of issuance of the Board of Directors, the Eastern Municipal Water District, acting as the legislative body of the Community Facilities District, number 2002-7, Pacific Mayfield, authorizing issuance of its improvement area C, special tax bonds, and approving the bond documents as to form. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And the board. As mentioned, this item is for the bond financing for CFB 2002-07 from the C, Mayfield. The property within the CFB is located in Division 4 in the city of Menifee, south of Newport Road and east of Marietta Road. A location map is provided for you within the staff report. This issuance will be a parity to bonds issued in 2017, which was for $2.125 million. The projected par amount for this issuance is $3,730,000. The primary landowner of the development is Pacific Communities, and the projected planned number of homes and build-out will be 298. Although the existing homeowners are currently paying their special tax, Pacific Communities is responsible for more than 20% of the special tax obligation. Therefore, a letter of credit is required and has been received from Cathay Bank. This financing complies with the debt issuance section of the comprehensive debt policy. The value to link requirement is 4-1, and for this issuance it will be 8.581. Delinquency levels are less than 5%. This issuance comes in at less than 1% at 0.82%. Effective tax rate is 2%. This one comes in at 1.74%, and the number of lots, the required minimum is 150. This will have 190 lots. Today we are seeking the adoption of the proposed resolution of issuance and the approval as a form for the first supplement to a trust indenture, the bond purchase agreement, preliminary official statement, and continuing disclosure certificate. Pending board approval, we anticipate pricing on October the 30th and closing on November the 23rd. And due to the very favorable market conditions and the low rates, the developer is very anxious to reach the market. The expected overall all-in tax interest cost for this deal is 3.31%. And at this time, I would just like to briefly thank and recognize our finance team. If you need to say to them, in case you guys ask me any questions, they are here filling for me. I consider them an extension of our staff. We have in the building, we have Webb, Building, and Piper Jeffrey. So thank you guys for your support. Okay, that concludes my report. I would be glad to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions? With that, I'll entertain a motion.
I move adoption.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
And item A passes with Director Sullivan and record absent. We'll move on to item B, which is to adopt a proposed resolution of issuance of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District, acting as the legislative body for the Community Facilities District number 2014-66, Meadow Creek, authorizing issuance of the 2019 special tax bonds and approving bond documents as to form. Good afternoon, folks.
This item, as you mentioned, is for money issuance for new money issuance for CFD 2014-66. The property within the CFD is located in Division 5 in the beautiful city of Moreno Valley, north of Old Lake Drive and east of Fishing Pass Road. The projected par amount is $1,225,000. The landowner of the development is Lennar Homes. There will be 161 homes at build out. Existing homeowners are currently being levied. Lennar is responsible for less than 20% of the special tax application, therefore a letter of credit is not required. This financing complies with the debt issuance section of our comprehensive debt policy. The value swing for this is 4.62 to 1. The delinquency level is 0. Effective tax rate is 1.81%. And as mentioned, the number of lots is 161. Today we are seeking the adoption of a proposed resolution of issuance and approval as form of the trust indenture, the bond purchase agreement, preliminary official statement, and the continuing disclosure certificate. Pending board approval, we anticipate pricing on October the 31st and closing on November the 14th. The all-in total interest cost for this is 3.92%. That concludes that report. Any questions?
Questions? I'll look for a motion on the item.
I'll make that motion.
I will second that motion.
Motion's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Let the record reflect that the motion passed with Director Sullivan and record absent. Move on to action calendar item C, which is to approve and authorize the award of a contract with GSE Construction Incorporated for $509,500 under specification number 1392S, Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility, interim storm flow control measures, and additional appropriation of $686,134.
Thank you very much.
You are up.
This is a direct board item. We have had a chance to go through O&E committee on this project.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit more time on the explanation of the project so that you understand why we are seeking to expedite and give some background. We did competitively bid this project, a summary of bids. Support services are included in this project, as well as the recommendation. If you look on the aerial photograph to the right, that is an aerial view of the Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility. On the right portion, you see an area highlighted in red. And this is an area where we are proposing to perform an earthwork, largely an earthwork project, to alleviate stormwater ponding that we observed this past year on the site. If you were to stand at the bottom of the red structure that you see outlined on there and look down toward the bottom of that page, you would look down the street. On the left, you would see some solar panels and you would see some electrical buildings. On the next photo, I'm going to show you what we observed back in February of this year. That's the view that you can see from that particular location. We had some significant ponding on site. That February 14th storm event was a very intense storm event. We've not had an event like that in many years. I think this was definitely something that opened our eyes to an issue that we want to address. We've developed a permanent project that will resolve this issue. This project we're referring to as an interim project that we can implement quickly is largely an earthwork project. If you look on the right, you see two electrical buildings, and you see that the water is actually approaching the doorways to those buildings. On the left, you see the solar panels that are there. Obviously, this is not a condition that we want to allow to continue through the storm events season of this year, and we want to prevent this from occurring again. Subsequent to the storm event in February, we retained Jacobs to perform a hydrologic assessment of the site to try to understand how this occurred, as well as to develop mitigation measures. The findings that we from that study were that we actually have runoff to the site that's coming from the adjacent hillside to the west. If you look at the three images at the bottom, you have a photo on the left which represents the northwest corner stream that comes onto the site. And that flow actually is channeled through a channel on the north of the facility and to the east. It's a well-established storm drainage system. The channel on the right is another channel that comes from the hillside as well, and it enters the west side of the facility, and it contributes to flow that accumulates on the south end of the property. If you look at the image in the center, you can see the storm sheds coming down from the hillsides and how that stream actually flows onto our property. And at that southern portion of the site is where we're seeing the ponding. And it's the occasion where we have very intense rainstorms that are striking that hillside, causing excessive runoff that are contributing to the ponding. We are not necessarily saying that we'll have a similar event this year, but we can't say we won't. And so we are proposing an interim project to prevent any concern related to that as part of this effort. We have advanced a permanent project, as I mentioned, and in the effort to advance a permanent project, operations asked us to implement an interim project on an expedited basis to alleviate concerns about this storm year. This project is largely an earthwork project, and if you recall that aerial image I showed you earlier with the red outline, the design drawing on the bottom is actually the earthwork portion that would be performed to cut a channel between two ponds that are surrounded by berms. And that would provide a flowway to allow ponded water to move off-site and not to accumulate in elevation and actually raise a concern relative to the assets on-site. We took the interim project and we advertised it as a maintenance bid on September 30th. We received three bids, and GSC submitted the lowest bid in the amount of $509,500. The engineer's estimate was in the amount of $418,200. I want to point out a couple of special requirements that we have on the contract. One is that the work is completed, substantially complete by December 23rd, which is pretty early in the storm season to provide some mitigation to risk associated with water ponding. The project requires that the contractor obtain specialized earthwork equipment on short notice. GSC is actually already mobilized on site, and we believe that GSC's bid reflects a lower cost because they're actually already mobilized, and that the other two higher bids probably reflect the actual value of the project considering the specialized requirements to it. In addition, we have Jacobs recommended for support service during construction. They performed the design work for the project. They could perform field work support, submittal reviews, responses to clarifications, change order review, as well as technical and special inspections, and preparation of record drives for the project. We've completed the interim design. We're here today asking for consideration of the project. We would like to provide a notice of award this month so that we can obtain substantial completion by December 23rd. Our recommendation to the board is an award of contract to GSE in the amount of $509,500 for the largely earthwork project. A contract, professional service contract to Jacobs in the amount of $41,756, an admin award of contracts necessary to complete the interim storm flow control project, and an appropriation in the amount of $686,134 with an anticipated total project cost of $696,134. With that, I'm available to address questions you may have.
Yes, I have a question. I think previously you mentioned, and I think Paul mentioned that where this water ultimately outlets, it's conveyed through an open channel that tries to cross a road.
Yes.
And that was inadequate, so it would back up. So how does this help to remedy that?
Actually, it's a good point. I mean, storm management is a system management. And we are addressing only one component of this on this project, and that is the ponding of water adjacent to our structures that we feel are at risk with that. Downstream of us, we also believe that channel that separates us from Diaz Road is also not well maintained. We believe that with this project, we reduce the risk on elevated stormwater on our site, but it doesn't address all the issues related to stormwater management all the way to Murrieta Channel.
So are we trying to work with the city or something about maintaining that? You know, I think it was owned by private property.
So you guys are right, Eric Slosser, that there are a number of downstream issues. We have met with the city. We've shared with them not only our concerns, but the fact that currently this open channel is not maintained. There's significant vegetation that is potentially impeding the ability of the stormwater to leave through the culverts. So they were going to do some research in terms of, you know, when this was constructed, it was still the county flood control that was in charge of that facility. So they were going to do some research on their end. We will circle back with the city and see if they've been able to determine who's responsible to maintain this channel. The net effect of this unmaintained channels is a couple of things. As you recall, when we had the flooding in February, what really conveys the water from that channel to the creek is a couple of small CMP pipes under Diaz Road. What we believe is going to happen in the next significant storm event with this earthwork project, we're going to have more water entering that channel. The channel CMP pipes aren't going to be able to convey. The water is going to overtop Diaz. There will be sheet flow across Diaz potentially into the creek. And we've alerted the city in the past about the potential for sheet flow across Diaz into the creek. So there's a number of issues. One is the vegetation. The other is the CMP pipes themselves from the channel to the creek are a limiting factor. What we're trying to address here is protecting our facilities. Recognizing that those issues may take some time to resolve, we feel it's imperative to us to protect the facilities so that we don't end up with the same type of damage that we experienced in February. If you recall, the intensity of the storm in February, when we looked at what had occurred, exceeded the 100-year storm event, at least localized. And we were able to work with our insurance carrier to cover the cost of damage to the electrical equipment, and that project now has been completed. So what we're trying to do is, again, protect our facilities. I want to just clarify, these interim measures complement the long-term measures. These interim measures will stay in place, and they are basically a first phase of additional measures to control the hillside runoff that Eric was referring to. There will be additional storm water improvement measures that we will bring to your attention in the future.
So in any case, it will help to protect our facility.
Yeah, and I think the channel on site is, we're still going to have, if we had a similar event, we'd still have that backwater effect up onto our facilities, but it's going to help control the backwater on our facilities so it's not impacting the buildings and the electrical structures.
And I don't know what the grades are out there, but that channel is flat enough to actually contain some flows and not increase the flow across.
Correct. Yeah, but I think what we're saying is, what can we do on site to do that protection? Recognizing until CMP culverts are addressed, until the capacity is restored downstream by removal of the vegetation, we are going to have, in a severe storm event like this, a backwater effect up into the property. And so, how can we contain and narrow that out of the buildings?
Okay. I was going to piggyback on his comments regarding the issue on Diaz Road.
Yes.
If you're going to wait for the city of Temecula to do something, you'll be waiting for a very long time, because they have a history of pointing the finger at everybody else when it comes to issues like this. So, and honestly, they don't take you seriously until you bring in a lawyer. So, that's a problem. I think if you're able to fix the problem on Diaz Road, I think most of the problem goes away. The vegetation, that's a problem, but two little culverts.
Yeah, those culverts, and they're clogged.
You need a box in there to get that stuff to move. The other thing I had concerns about was looking at the top elevation of Temecula Creek when these floods happens. Because I know that Temecula Creek did not get to its upper levels, okay? Because probably there was a lot of rain down in Temecula, but up in French Valley and places like that, probably not quite as much. Whereas in 1993, when Old Town flooded, we didn't get all that much rain. I mean, we did get rain in Temecula, but it was all happening to the north, and it was all coming in. Plus, you had the slowdown in the water from the vegetation in the creek, which now they have a management plan for that. But if Temecula Creek rises, and it won't matter if we have backfill or not, it's going to back up into our place. So, but I do think we need to urge the city to put a box under DS.
I would add that Roxanne Roundtree has been coordinating with the adjacent property owners regarding their where they can get in and clean up their vegetation. And we've got kind of mixed bag results. For the most part, it's been positive. There have been a couple customers that are maybe not as easily to move along, but we're making progress on that front as well, so that's very helpful.
So is there an easement through there? Is there a flood easement, or is that just private property that they built a ditch on a long time ago? And
the recorded maps show easements, but we're chasing down through title companies if there actually exist.
But it is a flood easement over private property.
Yeah.
If those maps are indeed recorded on title.
Okay.
And then, Joe, we have a high degree of confidence if we pass this item today, the contractor can get this done before the end of the year.
So we're going to work closely with the contractor. That's what the contract documents stipulate, is that they shall complete this work by December 27th. They're, as Eric mentioned, they're on site already doing other work for us. So they are best positioned to get this work done in a very quick manner. So we will definitely stay on top of it. We understand the urgency in getting this work done.
Well, and that's one of the reasons we brought this to the board directly.
Yeah, very, very, very good. So
I could add sort of with that, with regards to the easement, if there's a described easement on a map. We had a project recently, the language in the owner statement allowed it to be, it was in perpetuity, regardless of who owned it. So the subsequent divisions, the easement still was in existence. So,
what? What about the rule against?
The rule, well, it's different. But it's still one.
Director Corona has made a motion to approve the contract. Would you like to second it?
I would second that.
Been moved and second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
The item passes with Director Sullivan and record absent. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to item 5, our informational items, and I believe Ms. Walsh is in the building today to give us a federal legislative update. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good to see you.
For the federal update today, despite the backdrop of controversy in our nation's capital, there are actually a number of very positive and some productive discussions occurring around water funding as well as water policy. I'll start with the issue of PFAS. So Congress is up to about 35 individual bills addressing the issue of PFAS in the nation. Most of the bills are benign or don't apply to water agencies at all, but there are a handful that don't apply to us. At this point, the primary vehicle for the PFAS bill is the National Defense Authorization Act, also known as the NDAA. The Senate bill is the better of the two versions between the Senate and the House bill. The most problematic part of the Senate bill is that it requires EPA to set an enforceable limit, an enforceable MCL on PFAS within a two-year time frame, and we prefer to let the science dictate the time frame and not have a hard deadline for setting these limits. But the House language, however, is more concerning, and that it would create liability for water and wastewater agencies by designating PFAS as a chemical under CERCLA, also known as Superfund. So with that provision, it would put water and wastewater agencies directly in the line of liability for PFAS cleanup and mitigation, even though we're not the polluters. In July and then again in September, EMWD sent a letter to our House and Senate delegation kind of outlining our concerns with that particular provision, as well as kind of outlining some of the principles that we think would be best for them to adhere to as they move forward with this. The House and Senate NDAA bills are in conference right now. They're very different, but in light of an article in the LA Times last week related to PFAS that actually featured EMWD, Senator Feinstein is very motivated to help advance a solution that would help Californians. She's advancing a solution that would require the Department of Defense to enter into cooperative agreements with states, that would require the DOD to fund contamination mitigation down to the federal health advisory level or lower if a state has an enforceable standard like an MCL. Unfortunately, California at this point, or fortunately, only has a response and a notification level. So her efforts would have helped some Californians, but unfortunately it would not help us with our situation with the second well that was shut down at MARP. Next, I'd like to share the latest regarding appropriations and the continuing resolution. Congress is currently operating under a continuing resolution. The federal budget came to an end and they needed a new federal budget by October 1st, which is the start of the federal fiscal year. Congress was not able to accomplish that. So they passed a continuing resolution that keeps the federal government open until they can pass the 12 spending bills. That continuing resolution goes through November 21st. So Congress has until then to pass all the spending bills. Right now, they're working on kind of what they're calling a minibus or an omnibus, where they're going to package up a couple of the different spending bills. Assuming some of the bills get through, the water and energy bill is one of the most likely bills to pass, which is positive for us. That bill is important to EMWD because it funds the Army Corps of Engineers as well as the Bureau of Reclamation's budget. So projects like the Salter are funded out of that budget, and any potential funding from Title 16 would, for any of our projects like IPR, would also come out of that. So we're watching that closely, but at this point it's kind of hard to predict whether Congress is actually going to meet that November 21st deadline or not. If they don't, they'll likely pass another continuing resolution. If they don't pass a continuing resolution, we face a potential government shutdown. So there's the kind of three scenarios there. If you're probably hearing a lot about in the news, funding for the border wall, and then there are some other kind of polarizing policy and political things happening in the nation that appear to be obstacles to getting the budget and the financing issues complete. Lastly, I'd like to provide a recap on our recent meetings in Washington, D.C. The last week of September, Director Sullivan, Paul, Joe, and myself were in Washington conducting our advocacy meetings. Our key priorities for those meetings, including securing the remaining $4.7 million from our $25 million authorization from the Army Corps of Engineers. That 4.7 would exhaust our original $25 million authorization for our desalination program, which leads me to our next priority in D.C., which was to get an authorization modification to increase that original $25 million to $50 million. This summer in July, we made it over the first hurdle in that process, and our project was listed in the annual Army Corps annual report. And then the next process in that series would be for us to get our project listed in the 2020 Water Resources Development Act. So I think when we were in D.C., we did a great job kind of laying the foundation for that legislative play to get our project included in that bill. We have overwhelming support from our members of Congress and the Army Corps, so it's looking very positive in terms of getting our language in that bill. We also spent some time explaining PFAS to our members of Congress. kind of getting them up to speed on what it is and why it's important for them to kind of tune into that. And then we also continued working on a bill. It's H.R. 2313. That's the measure that would bring parity between how energy and water conservation rebates are taxed. Currently, energy rebates enjoy being exempt from being taxed. However, on the water conservation side, water conservation rebates are still taxed as taxable income. So this bill would bring parity to that inconsistency. Representative Huffman is the author of that bill, and the Committee of Jurisdiction is Ways and Means. They deal with all the tax issues. So until we can get kind of critical mass of support from Ways and Means, the bill's likely not going to go anywhere. So we're really working hard to get members of Ways and Means to sign on to the bill in hopes that they can pick up the bill and plug it into any of the tax packages that are going through Ways and Means. That's kind of the only avenue that that bill is going to make it. Senator Feinstein is going to be introducing her own Senate companion of that bill within the next few weeks, with Wyoming Republican Mike Enzi. So there will be a Senate vehicle for that too. But at the end of the day, that will have to be a Senate finance or tax play as well. That concludes the update that I have for you today. Between Danielle and I, we'll be providing quarterly updates. In addition, they're at the receive and file part of the board agenda. Our legislative, state and federal matrix are in the board agenda. You can always reference that for what we're taking positions on in our activity on the federal front. And that concludes my presentation.
I think one thing to add on to what Jolene mentioned, and she did a good job going over this, we are about, and will be hopefully this year, through our federal authorization on the desalter. But we have been promoting a modification of that authorization to add an additional $25 million. That could help us fund, for example, if we want to do brine treatment from the three desalters once they're constructed, we'd be able to construct a brine treatment facility and also improve the capacity to bring more water in and through the desalters. We've had a surprising amount of support for that from primarily the Corps of Engineers themselves, and it was included in their annual report. That is a very important step, so they're recommending at a kind of core level that modification. We're also hearing that a WRDA, Water Resources Development Act, will likely go through Congress early next year, and so this sets that up. And when we met with the members, they were all, our members, they were all very excited and pleased and willing to support making that request in the upcoming WRDA. So it's a number of steps we still have to go, but it looks very promising, and we're hopeful we can continue to expand our desalting capability with that money.
Very good. Does anybody have any additional questions for Julie?
No, very good report.
I had a quick one. I just noticed the political dialogue seems to be attacking people of wealth. Do you see perhaps a revision of the taxable municipal bond coming back in the next year or so?
That's a great question. I have not heard any discussions of that yet, but that's a high likelihood that we'll see that revisited.
Okay, and I trust we'll be able to once again voice our concerns about those issues.
Absolutely.
Okay. As I follow the news, I notice these things and start thinking that could be an area that could revise itself.
Would say certainly if there's a change in administration in 2020, that would be almost a certainty that that would come back.
Yes. Yes.
Well, good. Well, thank you. Thank you for your report.
All right. Thank you.
Good to see you. With that, we will go to item 5, which is our receive and file. I'll look for a motion and a second on that.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Item 5 passes with Director Sullivan and record absent. That will bring us to our calendar review. Nicole, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Vice President Pauley, members of the board. Attached to your calendar report today is one event, the BIA. Building Industry Association of Southern California is holding its Building Industry Show at Pechanga this year. And as a part of BIS, they have a water and housing panel that the district is co-sponsoring. It's on October 23rd, which is a Wednesday at noon. And General Manager Paul Jones is one of the speakers on that panel. Along with that sponsorship, we also have some tickets available to the Biz Show. If anyone is interested in attending, there are some interesting events. Some of the keynote speakers include former Vice President Dick Cheney and HUD Secretary Ben Carson. Okay. Moving to page 2, we have events on the board's calendar for the next 3 weeks. Beginning with this evening, we have the Boy Scouts of America Distinguished Citizen Award Dinner at 6 p.m., Director Slauson. And Director Pauly will be joining the Customer Service Department
tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning at 7 a.m.
On Illinois Avenue. Thank you for that.
Illinois Avenue, yes. Mm-hmm. On Monday, October 21st, Director Pauly has an update meeting with Deputy General Manager Laura Nomura at 7:30 a.m. And Director Corona has an update meeting with Paul Jones at 7:30 a.m. in Temecula. On Monday the 21st as well, Director Pauly has the Cal DSAL Executive Committee teleconference at 11 a.m. Tuesday, October 22nd, the Board Operations and Engineering Committee will meet at 3:30 p.m. for Director Slauson. On Thursday, October 24th, the Quarterly Deferred Comp Administration Oversight Committee will meet at 7:30 a.m., and that is on Director Pauly's and Slauson's calendars. The Southern California Water Coalition's annual meeting will be held in Long Beach on the 24th at 5:30 p.m. Director Pauly is scheduled to attend along with staff. On Friday, October 25th, we have the Riverside County Water Task Force Speaker Series at 7:30 a.m., and that will be held at Western if anyone would like to join that event.
Just might want to point out on that event, UC Riverside, Professor Kurt Schwabe is going to be speaking, and he's going to be presenting the results of the water affordability study that he did for in Eastern Municipal Water District service area. So it would probably be pretty interesting if you're into that stuff.
On Monday, October 28th, Director Slauson has an update with the General Manager in Moreno Valley at 7:30 a.m. And on Monday, the 28th as well, Director Pauly has an outreach meeting with April Cody at 7:30 a.m. in Paris. Tuesday, October 29th, the Board Executive Committee will meet at 7:30 a.m. And on the 29th, the annual French Valley Town Hall meeting will be held at 6 p.m. And that's on Director Pauly's calendar. Wednesday, October 30th, the Planning Committee will meet at 7:30 a.m. That is a reschedule. And that's for Director Corona. Monday, November 4th, Director Pauly has an update with Paul Jones at 7:30 a.m. in Paris. And the WR COG Executive Committee will meet at 2 p.m. on Monday the 4th, and that's on Director Slauson's calendar. Looking at page 3, we have some upcoming events of interest to the board and that the board will be attending. Just a reminder, as Paul mentioned, the annual Business Connection Luncheon will be held on October 24th at 11:30 a.m. The board's meetings for the next 3 months are listed. And on the following page, the upcoming committee meetings, there are a number of reschedules. The item listed in red is the December Administrative Committee meeting that has been moved to December 9th at 7:30 a.m. And that was just due to a conflict with the Aqua Fall Conference. Interagency meetings are listed along with the out-of-office schedule and holiday schedule. Are there any questions or additions to the calendar?
I do have on October 21st the stewardship committee meeting with the RCC team.
Thank you. I'll make a note of that, Director Slauson. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Nicole.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We'll do director's reports. Director Cronin, you attended the Rancho California Water District meeting?
Yes. I attended the Rancho Water Board meeting last week. Nothing really exciting going on that one. I gave a short report on some things that are going on over here. Also, it's not on here, but we had the Rancho Water EMWD ad hoc committee.
down at Rancho, and the interesting thing about, I think, about that one, other than, I mean, it was Rancho folks just love having us come downtown, what's going on. We had a visitor from the San Diego County Water Authority who insisted on attending the meeting, and a concerned citizen that came by. But,
not related. I'm not on the same issue.
unrelated issue. But before Paul got there, they were kind of scrambling, you know, let him in, not let him in. And they went and came in. Well, I'm not going to say anymore. And that's all I have.
Very good. I was not able to attend the Aqua Region 9 program, unfortunately, but I did attend the Winchester MAC last Thursday, and Kevin and I gave a full report on the PFAS, and Kevin did a fantastic job, and we got lots of questions on it, and questions from people in Winchester if there were contaminated wells up there, which we reported. We do not believe there are, but it was an interesting meeting. Kevin did a fine job with that. Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended the Marine Valley College President's Dinner on October 3rd. It was well attended, and to have a chance to talk to Supervisor Hewitt, and Mary Acton was there as well, and Neil Donner received the President's Award. I also attended the Willie Archive.
You are so popular.
The Willie Archive meeting. And among other things, there was an update on the regional housing needs assessment that cities are all dealing with, and basically the state is really trying to encourage or force, to some extent, municipal government cities and counties to have higher density. Even though they have long-term general plans, wants to sort of shut it down the city's throat. So they're going to discuss it further with SCAG. There was updates on TUMF and CalPERS and the extended Rick Bishop's contract until September 16, 2022. That concludes.
Very, very good. Do we have any directors with comments or future agenda items? And I just had one I mentioned to Paul. The Hemet San Jacinto Water Master is looking to perhaps increase the assessments of all the members, and I ask that we get a briefing for the full board as the representative on the Water Master for Eastern. I'd kind of like to get the full board involved in what we think and if that's necessary, because I think that'll be an item for full discussion at the Water Master, but I'd like to get at least the consensus of our board and our district on that.
So I think the Water Master meeting is at the end of November.
Yeah, so if we could maybe
perhaps bring something to the board early in November.
Yeah, I think at our November 5th or meeting before then.
Because we have the budget information from the Water Master.
So that would be great if we could do
that. Happy to do that.
And then, Mr. Legal Counsel, do we have a need for closed session?
We do not, Mr. Chair.
Very good. With that, we will stand adjourned until Wednesday, November 16th, 2019, back at our normal 9 a.m. starting time. So,
thank you very much for coming this afternoon.
Yes.